This is a HeadGum Original.
So usually a red-eye flight would leave at 10 or 11, maybe 12, from a westerly location, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the last red-eye flight you took, Evan? Do you remember?
Not specifically. Definitely.
I'm glad you asked. Mine was from L.A. A red-eye from L.A. to New York, it leaves at like 11. That's two. When you're leaving at 11, it's two in New York. It's a 5-hour flight. Uh-huh. So you're landing at 4 in the morning in L.A., 7 in the morning in New York. And supposedly you can have gotten most of a full night's sleep, right? That's a red-eye flight.
Right, but you're tired, you have red eyes, then you go about your day.
Then you have to go to work because you had a party weekend on the West Coast. You go straight to work on Monday. If the red-eye flight is leaving from Atlanta, it's flying east. You've got to be flying eastward with the time zones. You can't fly north or south or west and be making up this fake sleep via time zones.
Yeah, I don't think it's a red eye if you just leave at 11 from Atlanta and then arrive Richmond at midnight.
No, that's just a late night flight. You're flying to Europe, maybe the Middle East or Africa, if you're on a red eye flight from Atlanta. That is what I'm screaming.
It checks out. The detective work checks out. I believe it 100%.
Last week, it was just an unhinged rant. An unhinged rant that I think I've actually even done on the podcast before. But this week, we're diving deep into Goodbye Earl, a song that at least once during this episode, I'm accidentally going to call Earl Had to Die!
It was so clear that what you were doing as we talked about Goodbye Earl with the Wolves of Glendale last week, it was pitching a punch-up of that very song.
Yeah.
That here we are, just immediately turned around, had to do it.
It was too dumb of an idea to do. I was like, we are never going to do this. I did not plan for it to be done this week. I swear up and down. It's just too dumb of a punch-up idea to just sing this song in French?
Your obsession with this one red eye flight detail in this song is maybe as bad as Akilah's obsession with sidewalks in the Kelly Clarkson
song. Well, there's a lot more sidewalks in the Kelly Clarkson song, to Akilah's credit. But honestly, where Evan and I are going to pull, this episode is going to be a little loose. It's going to be a little free because I dropped you something, Evan, for the soundboard. Mm-hmm. It could perhaps be even the motto of this episode.
We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
I see where you're going. Yeah, we're doing it live. Doing this one live.
We were hoping, those of you who follow the podcast might know we were about to
In contrast
move.
To our other episodes that are tightly edited.
Yeah. We're doing this one live. So we're about to move to video. This week was supposed to be a video edit. And
not meaning that we are, leaving normal podcast mediums, the audio medium, the everywhere you normally get your podcast, we will still exist. This show will still exist. We are additionally doing video so that people that do their podcast on YouTube can check it out.
You'll be able to go to our YouTube channel and watch our podcast on video. The people at HeadGum have been working to set up this amazing setup at their studio here in New York City for us. I'm working with an amazing producer, Emma, an amazing videographer, John. The first two videos look great, but we just need a couple more edited before we start. And so we decided to slip in one more audio episode, but the timeline was a little short. So we decided we needed to...
We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
We'll do it live.
And I think even for the first time ever at the end of this episode... I'm going to sing the punch up live. Usually we spend several hours, sometimes days, getting the punch ups right. I'm just going to do the punch up live, and I kind of only sort of speak French. We're calling our shot. The punch up is me singing this song in French.
You teased it? You told them? You admitted what we're going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I'm going to sing the song in French.
Oh my God.
Because as I'll posit in the rest of this episode, I think it's pretty clear that whether the chicks, once known as the Dixie Chicks, whether the chicks knew it or not, I think the evidence is pretty compelling that this song happens in France, except when Wanda leaves France to move to Atlanta.
Your position is clear, man. We understand your position on the air traffic control issues.
Yes, and that's why I'll be singing the song in French.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, but it's a brothers only episode, so we're going to do a couple corrections. And you know what, Evan? I thought we only had two corrections, but that reminds me we kind of have three corrections. The first correction I'm going to drop on myself. I was kind of corrected mid-episode last time.
We're getting into it.
But forgot there's a cool bumper.
There's a cool new bumper, yeah, because we have to get it right.
We have to get it right. We got to get it tight. I was corrected mid-episode, but I feel like I was so wrong on this that I need to admit it, that I was wrong again. I need to make sure everyone knows I know I was wrong, that Sebastian is not a lobster. He may appear to be a lobster, but he's a crab.
He's a crab.
It's canon that Sebastian from The Little Mermaid is a crab.
Everyone knows that Sebastian is a crab. Your eyes maybe deceived you by a little bit of the way that his body is drawn. But this is just from last week. This is a hot off the press correction. I'm glad we're getting this one right.
Yeah. What else do we have on the corrections
list?
Well,
3 weeks ago, when we were talking about Shine by Collective Soul, we did say out loud, edit that out.
Ooh, we did.
Ouch. And that's something that we, early on in our run as host, promised that we would not do as a gag.
That was our fundamental promise to you, as podcast host to podcast listeners, that we would never, ever, as a overplayed, stale bit.
It is a sometimes effective and mostly flat joke that podcasters can use.
To say, like, edit this out later.
Emma, edit this out later. We're being so saucy.
We're doing it now, but only to punish ourselves. Don't edit that out, Emma. Mm-hmm. We accidentally did it, and we're not going to do it again. This is the only podcast that I know of that pledges to never say, edit this out later. This is a weird one, but I have a correction from the future.
What?
Yeah, I have a correction.
Why would you do a correction from the future?
Well, I don't know. I was just like, sometimes the corrections, if they wait a really long time, I forget them or I miss them. And I was just watching the episode we're doing next week. It's our first video episode. Mm-hmm. We have in Julian Shapiro Barnum, who is the host of Recess Therapy, the gentleman who interviewed Tariq, the interview that we made into the corn song. He's a great guest. It's a really fun episode. We talk about David Bowie's Young Americans, and in it, I was kind of like on the fence. I was like, I think David Bowie was the first white person to be on Soul Train, maybe one of the first. So I was kind of on the fence about it. But
we at least know that David Bowie was proud to be a white person on Soul Train.
Yes, I emphasize that. But I was kind of on the fence. I want to kind of do a pre-correction.
Wow,
he was not the first white person on Soul Train. He was like first three or four, but not the first. The first was Dennis Coffey playing his instrumental hit, Scorpio. But one funny thing about it, I found it on YouTube, they did not show Dennis Coffey at all. Like, you go forward a couple of people and you're like, okay, Elton John, they're like showing Elton John, everyone's dancing to Elton John. Dennis Coffey, they're like, maybe we won't put this guy on screen.
Wow. That's really interesting. Okay, anyway, you've now teased the artist and the guest from an episode from the future and pre-corrected it. So when you hear us talk about Soul Train, you'll know the truth.
Yes. I found this correction to be extremely pedantic, but a correction it is. Is it more right than what I said?
Well, be honest.
Sure.
Be honest. That's your favorite kind. Somebody nerding out on some tiny detail.
Ringo, when he was writing Octopus's Garden, wasn't served octopus when he ordered fish and chips. He was served calamari, which is technically squid. I find that to be almost too pedantic to include in the corrections, but hey, you got us. The other correction, this is like, we didn't actually say this, but a ton of people messaged us and like wanted us to say this. And this is like a universal correction, not for even something we said, But for something that you always hear, I had heard this, and I almost was going to say in our episode, and then I found out it was fake. Have you heard the joke John made about Ringo's drumming, Evan? Have you heard this? We didn't talk about it in the episode, but people always bring this up, and a bunch of people messaged us this after the
episode. Now I know what you're talking about. Yeah, in a press conference, somebody asked him, like, the supposed setup was, how about Ringo's drumming? Is he the best drummer in the world?
Yes, and
supposedly,
and John Lennon. I'd heard this so many times that John Lennon responded,
"Ringo's not even the best drummer in the Beatles,"
which is a funny burn. Okay, there's other better drummers in the Beatles, presumably Paul McCartney, who's drumming on some of their tracks, but it's really mean. And you know, John has this reputation for being like a more caustic or honest Beatle, but he never said that. Everyone thinks he said that. He never said that. That is too mean of a thing for him to say to Ringo. He really liked Ringo. Wouldn't have been that mean to Ringo.
That never happened?
He never said it. It was like I think it was maybe a bit that a comedian started saying in the 80s, and it just became apocryphally related to John, even though John didn't actually say it. So not a correction for us, but a correction for the universe. And I guess a correction from me to the fans. This is a revenge correction. A correction from me to the fans who asked me why we didn't talk about John saying that. Because he didn't. But, you know, let's get on to Goodbye Earl. I adore this song, Evan. I did it. I said Goodbye Earl. No, that's right. That's right. I wrapped around. I'm so convinced I'm always going to say the wrong thing that when I said the right thing, I thought it was the wrong thing.
Yeah,
I adore this song. It is one of my wife's go-to karaoke songs. It's one of my go-to karaoke songs.
Yeah, the karaoke songs of your loved ones play an important role in your life. You're going to hear them a lot. They capture important parts of their personality. You eventually need to learn them to sing along and offer your moral support at karaoke.
Do the na-na-nas on Earl Had to Die. Goodbye, Earl. Goodbye, Earl. But also, I mean, this album came out in, I think, 98. I'm not going to look it up because we need more corrections for next time. that's when I was a teenager living in Southwest Virginia, like an hour from Tennessee, an hour from West Virginia, an hour from North Carolina. And even though I was not a Chicks fan then,
you're saying you lived in prime Dixie Chicks territory.
It was like being a fish in water. Like, you could not escape this song. You couldn't escape this album. You couldn't escape the previous album. I think some Chicks purists might see this as their fifth album, but the first three albums were like albums that were sold out of trunks at small time shows before their lineup was finalized. And they only brought in Natalie, the lead singer, Natalie Maines, before the fourth album, which is Wide Open Spaces. That's their huge breakout album. This is their follow-up, Fly. This is mind-boggling. They're the only female band to ever have two diamond records in a row. That is 10 million sales per album. So they just own 98, 99.
Wow.
This is crazy that all of the singles for this album kept doing so well that they just kept releasing more singles. There's 14 songs on the albums, and 8 of them were released as singles, and there were songs on the album that weren't released as singles that charted.
That's amazing.
Radio stations were just like, well, people are calling in for this other song. We don't have the single. We'll just put it on the album.
So you mean, like, you make an album, you make a plan to say, like, oh, these four or five
single,
things are going to be
the
hits.
Second
they're catchy.
Single.
And then the radio stations went rogue, is what you're saying. Like, the label is not calling them saying, this is the next single, playing it.
Well, I think part of it was the label being surprised. Like, maybe you have a plan that's like, well, the first one will be up-tempo, you know, song. The second, I mean, this is like my made-up record label strategy. The second one will do a down-tempo ballad. Mm-hmm. And then the third one will release Earl Had to Die. That's the crazy up-tempo one.
You always go with the third one is a death song.
And then
sure.
All three of those do so well that you're like, oh, I guess we'll release a fourth single? And they just kept going until they got up to 8 singles.
Sure.
But then even a 9th song charted that wasn't one of the 8 singles. So it was both the record label being like, oh, I guess we'll keep printing singles, and also like just songs randomly going on the charts.
That's amazing. They 8 songs, let alone 9, that would chart off of a single album.
Yeah, so
way to go, Dixie Chicks. I'm going to keep calling them Dixie Chicks, even though they've renounced Dixie, just because that to me is their identity at the time. The name they were going by at the time.
I didn't realize.
Your first song is about dancing. Your second single got to be about love. Third song about murder.
Did you know that they're a sisters band, Evan? I never knew that until today. I'm embarrassed.
No, I just knew that they were all women from the South.
Yeah, but it explains their dulcet harmonies that the two who aren't the lead singers are sisters.
Mm. Yeah, they got that. They got that sibling vibration.
Yeah, I'm gonna edit one of their Wikipedia articles. Because all through the Wikipedia article, she's gone through all these marriages and divorces. No one can get her last name, her current last name, straight. I'm going to straighten that out. I'm going to go to her Wikipedia article. I'm going to figure out what her real last name is now. And I'm going to make it consistent across her Wikipedia article.
It was a cultural reset.
Wow, Andrew.
This song was all around. I'm not sure I like totally loved it because it was so played and then overplayed in 98, 99. But I personally had a moment that I wanted to share with you, Evan. I think you've probably heard this story approximately a dozen times from me.
Okay.
Where I really began to reconsider the Dixie Chicks at a specific moment in October of the year 2003.
Okay.
And I was sitting on a grubby living room carpet.
Okay.
In a house that was rented by a bunch of our friends from high school that had stayed from Radford. And they had rented the house and they were like, this is going to be a cool house where just two of us live and we're going to make these cool art projects. We're going to set up a little recording studio and our friends can come over and record demos and stuff.
Just living the best version of a townie life.
Yes. Townie. We're going to deliver pizzas. We're going to smoke weed and make our art. And within, I actually visited them right before I went to college and it was that. And by the time I came back in October, it had transformed into like the dirtiest, stankiest townie party house that I'd ever seen.
You visited in the summer before you left town. You came back 3 months later and it was already just
no,
the most.
No, I visited in August and 6 weeks later. Not months later, 6 weeks later in October, it transformed to like, you know, people are wandering in who you don't know they are, like hammered rednecks are like driving home and no one knows who they are and you're trying to take their keys and they're like trying to fight you. Like, but also, there's still this core group of guys that are all like amazing musicians, really sweet guys that are just kind of like, I don't know why our house is like this now, but it just is, who are recording demos for people and making this cool art. And
they dreamed a dream that their house would be the neighborhood hang zone, and it went too far.
Yes.
It spiraled.
It went too far.
Their dream got too big.
It's basically like a super bad teen movie, basically, except they were 22. So this one night, it was around the time, I know it was 2003 because I was looking up when this list came out. It was a list, I can't remember if it was the top 100 or top 500 albums of all time according to Rolling Stone.
Okay, okay.
And just like those lists are hateful.
Yeah, like, just like the other day, Pitchfork top 150 albums of the 90s came out. So it's just fodder
for clicks. You got to buy that issue. It was sure enough, the guys who lived in the house did. So they could have five copies and read them all. It was the top 100, I remember.
Yeah, good job, Rolling Stone. It worked.
And if you go back and look at that list, it's like insane how unfocused it is on pop music, on rap music, on hip hop. It's really, really white list.
It's Rolling Stone's view of classic rock.
Yes,
their classic rock centric worldview.
Yeah, or like the pop music that they are acknowledging in the 80s and 90s is like Madonna, who was better than her?
Okay.
A couple exceptions. You got some Marvin Gaye's, you got some Michael Jackson's. But these guys are going on the list, and these guys are all like super indie rock heads. And there's this one metalhead who's younger than them and was kind of like a younger brother than them, this guy Scott Lawson. And he was arguing with this older guy, Walt, who had like been in a band that toured and was like this indie, like just like an indie rocker who like wanted to record his albums on cassette.
He's
and stuff.
The senior stoner of the
He's
crowd.
This, yes. He was like a... Yeah, the emeritus of the crowd who, like, when Walt showed up, it's like, Walt's here. He's played a concert in Philadelphia.
He's the 24-year-old amongst all the 19-year-olds.
What became so funny to me is as we went further and further up the list, into the 60s, into the 70s, you know, maybe in the 80s and 90s, there's some surprises. By the 40s and 50s, 30s, 20s, like, these are all very, very famous albums. Walt just became livid. And Walt was just screaming at the top of his lungs after every album. It would be like, Madonna, Material Girl, number 19. And Walt would just scream, where's the GBV, man? Where's the GBV? Where's the goddamn Guided by Voices?
Guided by Voices.
Like, most of our listeners have probably never heard of Guided by Voices, but they're like an extreme indie rock band from Dayton, Ohio that like puts out like 8 albums a year and is like I think they're good, but like they have a very narrow audience that includes Walt. Like, they're not going to be on this list. They might be on some other list from some small magazine, but they're not going to be on this list. And Walt was so mad.
He's incensed.
And what became funny to me is that an album after album, the only person who had faced down Walt, maybe because he knew Walt the least, was this sweet, sweet metalhead redneck who is a genius, Scott Lawson.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd just be like, well, Walt, I understand that you're dismayed that GBV is not included on this list. I understand that. Emotionally, they're a very important band to you. Shaped your influences greatly. But I don't think you're acknowledging how important Material World was as an influence. I don't like Material World, Walt. My sister bought Material World and played that album every day as an 11-year-old girl. That's a very important album in the history of music, Walt. Like, they had that conversation like 10 different times about 10 different albums. Walt like stormed out because there's no GBV on the list. And there that night was my closest friend at this house, Jake. We're still very, very close friends. And Jake was sitting on the floor. He had a new girlfriend that I was meeting for the first time that night.
Always a tender time, bringing the new girlfriend to meet the homies.
And wild, because she was a Radford University student. Jake is, as discussed, a pizza-delivering stoner townie. You know, this is like, this is risky for Annie to be dating a stoner townie. I know Jake is like the greatest guy. But you might not think that if you're a Radford University student. And someone, just trying to include Annie in the conversation nicely, I don't think it was me, turned to Annie and said, Annie, this is after people have been arguing for music, about music for like 2 hours straight. Annie's just sitting there. And says, Annie, what kind of music do you like? And Annie just said, I like the Dixie Chicks. And just silence dropped across all these rockers. Just stone cold silence. And I just saw, and this moment was so pure and so beautiful.
It's giving me goosebumps right now.
Jake just reached across the floor and held her hand. And ladies and gentlemen, they were married 9 months later. That's true love.
Wow.
Is acknowledging that the Dixie Chicks are a great band, even if Fly and Wide Open Spaces have maybe been a little overplayed, and you like GBV in front of your friends.
Defending your significant other's right to love the Dixie Chicks. That's beautiful.
And and it was soon after that I gave the Dixie Chicks a second chance and just came to love them. That was before all their controversy. They had all the controversies. We won't talk about that because that was all after Goodbye Earl. All the controversies in the 2000s with George Bush and stuff.
That's later. They revealed their liberal politics to their conservative fans.
Yeah.
Huge shock.
Right. I mean, their third album, which was happening around then, went like 2/3 of the way diamond. Like, If they were literally boycotted by country radio, they could have been a band with 3 diamond albums in a row. If country radio stations had just been like, you said you don't like George W. Bush.
I remember the boycott. You're saying the album still sold 6 million copies with the radio boycott?
The album sold 6 million copies.
That rocks so
hard. Now, I do think the album was, I think the album had been out a while. Like, I think the album had been out like 6 months to a year before the controversy.
Oh, okay.
But like then maybe sales go from like really steady, like, I don't know, you know, $50,000 a month to close to zero. I don't know. This isn't a music industry podcast. This isn't a music industry podcast.
You're telling me a little too late.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
I adore this song. I'm glad we're doing a song I adore because we kind of been on a tough run of songs I don't like. I think in the course of 6 weeks, Evan, we did The Lazy Song, we did Rude, we did Every Time We Touch, we did Thinking Out Loud.
You're saying you didn't like Shine by Collective Soul?
I do like Shine by Collective Soul. I don't like those other 4 songs, and I want to admit that hosting this podcast is a delicate balance between loving the songs we love and hating the songs we hate, and perhaps we hated too much in the last 6 weeks. Perhaps we hated too much.
Annie Rauerta came on here to talk about Every Time We Touch and said that the podcast was built on a foundation of hating. I think that cut you too deep.
She wasn't here for the episode where we talked about how much we love The Gambler. She wasn't here when we were talking about how much we love Tom Petty. You know, she wasn't here for the episode. I wasn't here, but I listened to your episode because I'm a loyal listener when I'm on paternity leave. The episode you did with Nagin about frontin'. Those are great songs, and we love them. But do we punch them up? Sure.
Absolutely.
We don't hate them. You know what? The real problem is, I hate to admit this, Evan, but I looked at a comment
What?
I looked at a comment.
Oh, Andrew, that's the ultimate no-no.
You're not supposed to look at a comment.
You can't be an online creator and go out there reading comments all the time.
I went and looked at our Apple reviews, and there were two or three that were really good. I should have stopped right then. And then there was one, and it, you know why it really was? Why it really cut me?
Mm-hmm.
It was 2 stars. They kind of liked it.
Oh.
This wasn't someone who was casually dropping a one. This is a 2-star review. And they said that we... what did they say? I think they said that we nitpick songs like HR executives, human resources executives, just like picking apart songs like office drones. And it just cut me to the quick. And I felt really bad.
Oh, it's a great roast.
You know
I respect it for the roast.
I slept on it, and I was like, you know what? Do we nitpick songs, especially the songs we hate, like we've unfortunately done a lot of lately because people have been picking them? Maybe we just need to do more songs we like. But I was like, you know what? We're not nitpicking songs as HR people. You know what we're nitpicking songs as, Evan?
What is that?
We're nitpicking them as songwriters.
Hmm.
We've been writing songs for a long time. I realize that this year is the 20th year I have been a songwriter. I've gotten into some of the dumbest fights in my life with you, with Michael, and with my sister-in-law Sarah about writing our own songs, so much nitpickier than the songs we talk about on this podcast. Those would truly be insufferable to the people who think that we nitpick songs too much. Just listening to us write our own songs. There was a time you and I were working on a theme song for, we'll have to drop it in, for Song Voyage, our show where we went to Asia.
Yeah, we did half a dozen episodes of this travel show where we went to other countries and wrote songs with very odd artists.
And we had already argued for a week with the production company about the title of the show. We finally got them to change the working title of the show, The Traveling Gregories, which we thought was like not descriptive to Song Voyage.
Song Voyage, great name. Sounds like Bon Voyage.
Sounds like Bon Voyage. It was our argument. We went with it. They eventually came around to it. You and I worked on the theme song for 3 or 4 days, and it's like 2 lines of lyrics, and there's this one lyric, Song Voyage, a trip for songs. And I wanted it to be a trip for songs, and you wanted it to be a quest for songs.
I wanted it to be a quest for songs.
We fought about it for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 years later, I had absolutely forgotten about this fight. 100% forgotten about this fight.
Okay.
And you and I were pulling up an episode of Song Voyage to watch something.
Uh-huh.
Big Virgin Energy. And the theme song came on, and I was like, ah. We really should have done Quest for Songs. I don't know why we didn't do Quest for Songs. And you looked at me and you were like, we fought about that for 3 days. You wanted to do Trip. I wanted to do Quest. And it's like, who cares?
Oh, classic example of you proving me right years later.
Yes.
But it is funny when you know that the piece of music we're talking about is only 20 seconds long. Yeah, I just found it and I'll drop it in.
Yeah, but the...
A Trip for Songs! With our mouth.
But otherwise we're pretty useless. It's a song voyage.
20 seconds of music.
I sang
a wrong lyric
that we fought about. It ended up being totally useless. I sang pretty much useless. I lost that fight. The funniest fight that I remember us ever having about a song, nitpicking our own song, was the four of us were driving to Connecticut for a concert. Me and Mike were in the back seat, and we were fighting about a line. We'd been working on this song for 9 months.
You and Michael co-writing a song.
9 months. It was the longest I'd ever worked on a song.
Mm-hmm.
Are we the kind of people?
I remember this. Are we the kind
of people that will write a song in one night? No. No. We will put 9 months in.
We had the opposite problem where I challenge you to write a song in one night. Maybe you should try it sometime, Andrew.
So we were done.
Come up with a hit like
Michael
Sexy
and I,
Bitch.
We were done. This is the last line to finish. And what it came down to was whether to use the word would, should, or could in this line. And Michael and I were arguing about it for maybe 2 hours. And we were like arguing in circles. Like we weren't always on the same position. Like I would be arguing should for like a while, and then I'd be like, well, maybe would is better.
It implies intent.
And finally, like either you or Sarah in the front seat was like, you guys have to quit. This is insane.
I can imagine exploding over that. If I've listened to that for 2 hours, just all of a sudden I snap and I go, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it.
This is insane. You have to stop nitpicking this song lyric like an HR representative. But the funny thing about it is that me and Michael that have been at like loggerheads for 2 hours. Michael and I locked eyes, and suddenly we realized we were no longer enemies. We were allies. And we turned to the front seat and we were like, it doesn't matter what the final word is. Could, would, or should. We don't know, but it matters. And it turned into an hour-long fight between the two of us and you and Sarah about whether that word would matter. And you know what? 8 years later, I cannot remember which word we used and which word I preferred. Mm-hmm.
So once again, years later, you've proved me right in the original argument.
Yeah, and it's like we nitpick the lyrics to all these songs, but it's like, of course the song can still be great, even if a lyric is dumb. Like, the emotion and the pathos of a song is beyond all that. You know, you print Dylan lyrics in a poetry book, and you're like, well, this is bad. And then you hear Dylan sing the song, and it's good.
And I mean, I'll just speak frankly to fans of the show, and this goes for the entire lifetime of the show, not just our hosting run, you know, mask off a bit. The whole point of the show is to nitpick, and that's why it's fun. But doing so is in and of itself a little bit of a bit. Because what? Everyone knows instinctively that the song has power because the lyrics are being sung with music. They're being sung, not spoken. So, like, that's why Rude works as a hit. You know, no matter how dumb the lyrics are, like, it works because the melody's catchy, man. Period. Period. So, to nitpick the lyrics at all and dwell this long on tiny moments and verbiage is inherently frivolous, but also fun.
Yeah, we were talking to someone last night about our Rude episode, and they were like, I love that part where he says, why you gotta be so rude? And me and Evan were like, you know what? It worked. guess it worked. 2.2 billion people clicked.
Yeah, 2 billion people clicked on Rude. It's just so usable. It's just so relatable. Doesn't matter if the original song was good. You just remember the one line, and then I want to say that in my real life. I want to say that to people. Why you got to be so rude?
I just want to put a wager down here. I don't have a $5 bet going here, Evan. So let's do a $5 wager here. Mm-hmm. We've done that once before with Connor Ratliff. $5, Connor Ratliff, we have a three-way bet going, if you remember from Connor Ratliff's episode, that Dua Lipa will sing the next Bond song. I don't know if you remember that. I have that stored in my head. So yeah, I've got that going.
That wager's out there, and I think it's actually, I don't know, I think I'm pretty sure I wagered for that. It's kind of true, man.
You wagered against it because you were like, there's 1,000 good singers. There's only one Dua Lipa. Even if she has the highest likelihood, this is your logic at the time.
Yeah.
Even if she has a 20% chance and everyone else has a 1% chance.
You're right. That does sound like my math.
That does sound like you.
Okay, what's our wager?
I think in the next 8 years, we're going to have an Adam Sandler level romantic comedy called Why You Gotta Be So Rude. That song has been so successful at permeating our brains with why you gotta be so rude as an idiom that genre of romantic comedy that, like, you just see a poster on the subway that's just go with it. Or that is a George Clooney, Julia Roberts poster that's just like it's like Ticket to Paradise.
Oh, Lord.
It's just like, that's just a hook from a famous song and you made it a movie title? Okay. Why You Gotta Be So Rude, that is going to be a Netflix Adam Sandler movie. That's our $5 bet.
Yeah.
So 2030, 8 years, if it's by the end of 2030.
8-year window? Okay, yeah, hang on. Siri, set a reminder for 8 years from now.
January 1st.
To see if there is a movie called Why You Gotta Be So Rude.
Okay, so I guess it's time for a song. We're not going to nitpick. We're just going to enjoy.
We're gonna nitpick it. We're gonna nitpick it like songwriters.
We're gonna nitpick it like songwriters.
The accusation that we're haters completely rolled off my back. I'm happy to live in this world where some songs we can hate, some songs we can love, some songs we can experience both feelings. That's what it is to be human.
Like I said, it's a balance. We gotta love some songs. We gotta hate some songs. But we gotta punish the bad music, nitpicking it and improving it. And we got to figure out how we're also going to punish the good music by nitpicking.
It's tasty. It's a tasty intro. I love this B3 organ.
Not what you're normally hearing on country radio.
No. Well, maybe.
Both active in the 4-H club, both active in the FFA.
Okay, 4-H club and FFA. Important details here.
Yeah.
Landing this song squarely in the heartland. You eventually, mean, it's implied it's in Atlanta.
Le Fermier Futur d'Alsace-Lorraine.
That's the future farmers of Alsace-Lorraine.
FFA, the Future Farmers of America, and the 4-H Club, the Youth Development Organization. Do you know what it stands for?
The 4-H Club?
Mm-hmm. Do you know what 4-H is about? I'm pretty sure the 4-H's are just what they hope to develop in youth. It's like heart, hands, and health. I can't remember the fourth H. It's probably homies.
Yes, but it's different in France.
Yeah, yeah, it must be different in France.
But just the details here, country music remains the music that it is most acceptable, nay, encouraged, to tell a story in. And the efficiency of detail here is just remarkable to me. This is written by a legendary songwriter, Dennis Lind, who wrote like songs for Elvis. He wrote songs for a ton of people in the 90s. Like, is just one of the most legendary songwriters in Nashville history. And, randomly, James Marsden's father-in-law.
Wow.
Major sound fact.
But the efficiency of detail in getting this story across of like these two young women who are BFFs in this small town is just really beautiful to me.
Mm-hmm. Almost as good a story as Rude by Magic. I kid. Okay, let's proceed.
After graduation, Marianne went out looking for
the layering instruments.
Okay. So I don't want to pause too frequently here, but yeah, the story's escalating very quickly. The musical bed of acoustic guitars panned in stereo is also escalating to take the energy up to take us there as we hear the story of Wanda and Marianne unfold.
Amazing setup that she was looking for a brand new world, and her friend looks all around the town, and all she found was Earl. Mm. It's such a good, like, denouement of like, this will be fine, right? Even though you know it's not going to be, even especially after you've sung it at karaoke 20 times. One very funny thing about the music video, Evan, we talked about this a lot with a song we'll continue to bring up apparently every episode, Magic's Rude. We determined that the music video for Magic's Rude was part of the M exclamation point CU, the Magic Cinematic
That's an important
universe.
Question. Is the video part of the canon of the song, or is it just impressionistic
this
art?
This video is majorly part of the CCU, I think, Chick Cinematic Universe.
Okay, so we can look at the video, get details from the video, and better understand the song.
A lot of the details of Earl's murder, spoiler alert, that happened later in the song are explicitly shown in the video, but like only hinted at in the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an amazing 90s actor playing Earl who they met backstage at a New York place, and they were like, oh, we want you to be in a video someday. He said, I would love that. I'm a fan. They sent him the script, like, for the music video. You know, it's probably just like a 3-page treatment. And they're like, we want you to play the cop. And Dennis Franz, who was playing a cop on TV
from
NYPD Blue, Dennis Franz was like, no, I want to be Earl. And he's just great. He's great at it.
Well, it wasn't 2 weeks after she got married that Wanda started getting abused.
Oh, boy.
She put on dark glasses.
2 weeks.
Moving the song along. Moving it along.
It's honestly, they could have said anything. Like, it can happen immediately in the song, and they could have said, oh, you know, 1 year later or something, but they're really painting a picture
cut,
scene, next beat
yeah,
in the story.
This isn't like one of those fake country story songs that's like, I live in a small town and the trucks are driving around, that has like the details but no story. No. Cut, cut, cut scene. Oh, there's a lot,
a lot of story happening. Okay, she's already getting beat up, but something about the sound of Natalie Maine's voice, the attitude in it, it is signaling to you very strongly, this is not a sad song, this is a sassy song, even though we haven't got to that part in the song yet. Like, it's being sung to your feelings about how you should feel about this song. Yeah. Am I making any sense?
Well, she finally got the nerve to file for divorce. She let the law take it from there. But Earl walked right through that restraining order and put her in.
Okay, so that's basically three A parts in a row, right? Just, we've just been in the verse.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, there's the B, go. Baby.
Okay, we made it to a B part, but you're saying everything so far has just been the one verse, about three stanzas of plot. Yeah.
And I think we're also getting to the most important line of the song.
Okay, dial it back just a couple seconds here. Take a listen to this B part.
Pause it! Now,
the smoking gun.
Let me pause it here.
Oh,
now
Andrew,
that you have paused
is,
it,
Andrew's the just livid right now. He cannot stand it.
At midnight.
A midnight flight.
A midnight flight from Atlanta.
Explicitly described
shall
as
not
red eye.
Fly in Dallas. Or shall not land in Dallas. Shall not land in Oklahoma City or any of the other Heartland cities.
No, because then she'd be going, she'd be gaining hours and landing at 11 or midnight. That's not a red eye.
No, that's a late night flight. This woman is flying to Paris.
Andrew's so mad at this song.
No, I love it. I love it. The problem here isn't the song. There's no problem with the song. This is the perfect song. The problem is the fans. The fans have misunderstood it as being set in America, and it's set in France.
Okay. You must be right. All the evidence is there.
All the evidence is there. It's a red-eye flight from Atlanta.
There's no possible way this song could be set in the American South.
No.
That's the murder plan. Okay, let me find. Sorry, so much to recap. The song unfolds so quickly. So the chorus is na 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 na. And over the na 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 na's, they dole out the details of the murder plan.
Yeah.
Right? They decided Earl had to die, and that line is so impactful that you have internalized it as the title of the song.
Yes.
Wrongly.
Yes.
Then the hook drops. Na 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 na. Those black eyed peas.
Suggesting that they're killing him with poisoned black eyed peas.
They're poisoning his black eyed peas.
Made explicit in the canonic music video.
Yeah. One thing I like to think about is that they already ran through very quickly the details of, okay, domestic abuse started early in this relationship. She filed for a divorce, got the divorce, and a restraining order.
She did the right thing. She did the right things in terms
she
of trying
did,
to get out.
Yeah, she did all the things and that society would tell you to do, and yet he came over and hurt her badly.
The song is being honest about how bad the system is at protecting Wanda, as portrayed in the music video by Jane Krakowski.
The system is bad at protecting the victims. And so one thing that's glossed over here, which is fine by me because we're just leaping through the plot, is that at some point, Wanda had to make a call to Earl and say, hey, let's bury the hatchet. I still love you. You want to come over for some black eyed peas?
I feel like Marianne, with her big city learning and her big city cunning, is probably helping finesse that. Is probably like calling Earl and being like, oh, Earl, like, I'm so sorry. Things went south between you and Wanda. Like, I'm in town. Like, oh, we had such good times, even though she fucking hates Earl. They never had a good time in their life together.
No, she
let's all get
him
together and have dinner at my house. I know you can't go over to her house because of the restraining order you broke. And then they feed him the black eyed peas. I think, you know, obviously Wanda wasn't on the plan. I'm not saying that that she wasn't, but I think it's major team effort here.
Why don't you let us leave, Earl?
Tar. Wrapped up in the tarp.
Wrapped up in a tarp.
Okay, next verse. Cops came by to bring her a lamb. Ooh, one of my favorite lines all time. Low. Then they tip their
hats and said, "Thank you, ladies. If you hear from him, let us know."
So the cops are phoning it in.
Yeah, you're right. They're phoning it in. But we still haven't got to my favorite line yet. This is a really good line, trust me.
Okay, continue our.
He was a missing person who nobody missed at all.
Got him!
Okay, got him! Got him!
It turns out he was a missing person that nobody missed at all. That's why the cops were phoning it in.
That hits you right in the songwriter funny bone. That's a perfect Andrew line.
It's funny, but it's meaningful. And you know, the cops are just turning a blind eye to something that's slightly wrong. And what could possibly go wrong in another situation when they do the same thing with a different set of circumstances?
the cops in this case are good guys. We've just decided the way that they overlooked this murder.
They took their hats.
Yeah. And because morally, we've decided that Earl deserved to die. Okay, we're all okay with this. Yeah. Okay, back to the B part for the third act here. Nah, 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 nah. Okay, back to the hook. Let me just recap a little bit. They bought land together.
Yeah.
Started a roadside stand. They're selling ham and jam.
Yes.
I asked last week if it was, is this a fried green tomatoes scenario, which means is Earl in the ham?
I don't think so, because I think it's pretty established later. We have kind of a flashback at the end of the song where they're going out to the lake and he's in the tarp and in the video he's in the trunk. I think it's pretty clear, it's suggested by the song that he's been dumped in the lake.
Yeah.
And is at the bottom of the lake. Now I will say, you know, the women have come into some sort of largesse. They're purchasing this plot of land.
Yeah, where the money comes from.
Tennessee ham. In my opinion, if you were selling Tennessee ham in Tennessee, you wouldn't be able to sell that at a premium. Why would you even buy Tennessee ham at a roadside stand?
Very
in Tennessee
common commodity.
If you could go to a grocery store. If
and
you
inferior
to, a
to the Virginia variety.
However, where is fine artisanal food prized more than any other nation? Where would Tennessee ham be unavailable to the common person unless a gourmand had imported it and was selling it at a roadside stand? I think that this is more evidence that Marianne and Wanda are in France on Highway Saint-Neuf.
Sacre bleu!
That's the only way they could have afforded land in France is by selling Tennessee hams.
You buy the Tennessee ham in bulk, and then you are just making bank, turning it over into euros.
Each one of those, 100 euros a pop, for sure.
I mean, the French people love the jambon beurre. That's their favorite. Their favorite sandwich is just a ham and butter. And if you can mix up the ham to a fine Tennessee ham, that's great.
Oh, yeah. The dry cured.
Yeah. Have a little a jelly of framboise on the side. That's strawberry.
You're right. This is irrefutable evidence that the song is at least the second and third act of the song are taking place in France.
Yeah. This is the smoking gun.
Yeah.
That's just fun. That's just
now
good.
Now these Dixie chicks are just having fun with you.
That's just good, solid fun.
Yeah, that's just good. We need a break. We're just hooting. One thing that I love is that there is no chorus lyric that's about Earl, really. The chorus, the thing you want to chorally sing along with, the thing you want to sing along with, is just na na.
Yeah,
it's just a melody,
and it's
that
giving
feels
you,
good,
and it's giving you room to listen along to their little asides about how the true murder happened, the fried green style tomatoes a Fried Green Tomatoes style murder. In Fried Green Tomatoes, they kill a man and turn him into barbecue. Mm-hmm. Here, they're poisoning him with black-eyed peas, driving him out to the lake, wrapping him in a tarp, putting him in the trunk. And I don't think we hear him go in the lake, lyric-wise, but I think that's where he's in.
Yeah, they did. I think they made the right choice not to put in a sound effect of a giant splash.
Yeah, they did do the, I don't know, that was really fun when the stop, though. I will say, in the music video, there's a really fun, like, dance thing happening during this part where Dead Earl is just dancing with them. And it's
like waterlogged,
it's very light and funny. Yeah,
waterlogged,
like waterlogged,
undead zombie Earl?
Like, covered in like, zombie makeup Earl, Dennis Franz, just, like, having the time of his life. Like, this one day of shooting is so much more fun than 6 months of NYPD Blue.
He's dancing like Thriller. He's just doing an undead,
yeah,
undead
and
dance.
Everybody stops on the big drum hit. It's very fun.
Mm-hmm. Sick banjo part.
I want to go to a Chicks concert because you know the whole audience is just singing na 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 na.
The feeling of 20,000 voices singing na 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 na, rejoicing, yeah, over the death of a, yeah, domestic abuser.
And big fun finish. Big fun. Big fun. Big fun finish. Da da ba ba. Have we heard that chord yet in the song?
No, they snuck in the flat 7 there at the very end.
That's fun.
No, I haven't heard that. Just one little fresh harmony there to go out on.
This is a perfect song.
Andrew, you're just unabashedly loving this song, trying to write your own redemption story from being a professional hater.
There's so much hate in this world. We have to rise above.
But I bought it. It, like, it doesn't feel fake to me. I believe your true love for this song.
I love this song, and just as Jake once reached out to Annie's hand in that room full of indie rock fans, guided by voices and Slayer fans, when she said she loved the Dixie Chicks, I want to use this podcast as a space for me to reach out my hand to all sorts of music and embrace it, and then make better versions of it.
Let's punch it.
Okay, we're back, and everybody knows what's about to happen, but this is maybe a first for us, and we've been hosting that Andrew's just going to do this live. We're not going away recording nothing. I have a karaoke track, and Andrew is ready to blow.
I'm doing it live. I'm standing up right now. I don't think I've ever,
wow,
done that in the history of our podcast, stood up. That feels like a different thing, but I just felt like I needed to take it to a full karaoke zone.
You standing up
to a handheld mic.
Me being open to life.
Instead of a podcaster mic. I just want to emphasize that I do not really speak French. I'm not sure we've made that clear earlier in the podcast. There was once a time that I spoke French, but that time has passed. Or as the French would say, passé. So this is going to be a little bit of a challenge for me. I had some help translating lyrics into French before Earl had to die. We know from the evidence provided by the Dixie Chicks, a red-eye flight out of Atlanta, probably on Delta, that this song takes place in France. And finally, us, the fans of the Chicks, can hear it in the language that it was supposed to be performed in by someone who doesn't speak that language.
Allons-y! Tire! Tire!
All right, okay.
Non-stop.
Sacre bleu.
Mais rien n'est loin d'être meilleur ami pendant toute l'air et toute secondaire. Tout du membre du Club 4H actif dans les FF Alsace-Lorraine. Après le bac, mais rien n'est parti chercher un nouveau monde. Wanda a cherché dans cette ville et tout que ça trouvait.
Oh, there he was, yeah, sure.
All right.
Juste une semaine après qu'elle s'est mariée et Marianne s'est fait battre. Elle mettait des lunettes de soleil et les manches longues pour couvrir ses bleus. Finalement, elle a le courage de demander un divorce.
I know divorce. Sure.
Et la laisse la loi finir son procès, mais la violer sa ordonnance restrictive.
Sacré bleu.
Mais rien n'est voir tout de suite d'Atlanta sur un vol de nuit. Elle a tenu la main de Wanda pendant qu'elle faisait le plan. Et se leur a pris longtemps de décider. Là, tu devrais mourir. Au revoir, Earl. Earl devait mourir. C'est pas noir, mais c'est assez bon, Earl. Tu te sens mal? Fais les repos, Earl. Et fais le noir. Dans cette bâche, hein, Earl? Au revoir, Earl. Okay, feeling. Devenu pour être arrêté, ils l'ont cherché du long maison, les flics. Ils ont baissé les chapeaux et dit merci, mesdames, si vous parlez, dites-le nous. Ben, les semaines ont passé et le printemps est devenu l'été. L'été est devenu l'automne.
Oh, curse these background vocals.
On fait c'était un peu son manquant que. Personne manquait. Et les filles l'ont acheté un train sur l'autoroute 109. Elles vendent du jambon de Tennessee et confiture des fraises. Et elles dorment bien parce qu'elles devaient mourir. Au revoir. Elles devraient mourir.
Devaient mourir.
On a besoin d'une pause, Earl. Une pause.
Bon appétit.
Allons au lac, Earl. On fera un pique-nique. Et on te mettra dans le coffre, Earl. Ça te dit? Super. Allons-y, Earl. Hey. Yeah.
Enchanté, Earl.
You should have picked a song with less R's in it to do.
Au revoir.
Ha, ha, ha. Au revoir, Earl.
Allons-y, Earl. Au lac. Pour pique-nique. Yes.
Oh, gotta sit down.
Encore.
Gotta sit down.
Encore. Bravo. Bravo.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, should have.
Wow. Oh, I loved it.
Probably should have kept that contained to a private karaoke room and not a public one.
Andrew, bravo.
Wow. Earl.
I recognize two words. Well, three if you count Earl. Tennessee.
Yep.
For sure. And divorce. I recognize that. And then I inferred a few things about morir.
Yeah. Yeah. Morir is die. What about pause for pause?
No idea.
We have to take a pause and then they cut out for a second. I kind of hit that.
I don't know. I thought pause might be fish.
Entire lines of this fantastic translation done by my friend John that I missed because the timing. Like I said, I don't speak French. That was my best, guys. And
why disclaim it though? Because you speak French better than the average American on the street.
I speak French better than the average American on the street. I think, you know, it's just I've been to France in the last probably like 6 years, and it's just an incredibly disheartening experience to try to speak French with a French person on the street in France, because you think you speak French and then you like say something that you are like 100% sure. Is French.
You mean you're bringing your memory of high school French to the streets of Paris.
To the streets of Paris, and people are just like, what are you even saying? And right back to your face in English. And you only have to have someone say that to you a couple times before you give up. It's
and then you just speak English to the Frenchmen, and they speak it way, way, way better.
Yes, then you're French. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, back in the day when I spoke French a little better, probably the greatest... I peaked my French... Absolutely peaked at age 21. I was like my last night there. I was being served by a waiter. Our dad was visiting. We were at a restaurant, an Indian restaurant for some reason. We were just tired of eating French food. I don't know why. And I talked to the waiter for a while. He was like, oh, are you here on like on vacation studies? And we chatted for like 5 minutes. And as he turned away to leave, he turned back to me and he said, like, excuse me for asking, but are you German? And I was like, never, never am I going to be mistaken for a native French speaker. But if I can be mistaken for a German who's really trying to speak French well, that's good.
That's a
but
huge compliment.
That was my peak. I've gone down from there. Now a French person does not perceive me to speak French at all. Yeah. And I don't think that performance of Earl Defray Mourir is going to help my case, honestly. I think I'm going to be dropping some corrections about this song in a future episode. And sadly, I'm going to have to do all those corrections in French.
At least you've entered this song into the permanent record. Now that it's been recorded and performed once, we can send this to the Library of Congress.
You know, I've been talking about this for years. For years, I've been making the case that Earl had to die in French, but I never really got farther than singing or talking about the first verse and, you know, defending that the FFA could, in France, be the FF Alsace-Lorraine. And it feels good to have gotten limped all the way through the song. You know,
it was a cultural reset.
Evan, what's your walk-in music this week?
What is your walk-in in music?
My walk-in music is me being a man on the run. I've just murdered a man named Earl, and I am out on the lam, but also feeling a bit free because my relationship with Earl was not good.
Morally, you might
prematurely
have been right.
Yeah, morally, I'm definitely in the right. Absolutely. But after the murder, you know, you definitely question things like whether you were acting ethically, la-di-da.
Whether the cops will miss him as a person or whether he won't be missed at all.
Yeah, exactly. You can't count on the cops being had like that. You don't want to bank on that. You know, you hope.
Do the cops like you enough to ignore laws for you, or do the cops not really like you and kind of have it out for you? Unclear.
My point is that Papa was a Rolling Stone by the Temptations. I always remember because Earl is. I refer to Earl as my daddy here. While we were in a relationship, I called Earl daddy. That's how this song works. But now I'm on the lam. I've got, you know, foot to the gas I have a total junker of a Nissan Altima, I think, in this vision. Okay, anyway, that's my walk-in music.
I'm embarrassed. I didn't know that song was by the Temptations. I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, it's the Temptations in their, you know, their mature phase. They had moved past My Girl into Social Statements. And yeah, Papa was Rolling Stone. That's a revolution when it came out, a revelation.
My walk-in song, I'm walking in to a room full of songwriters and sending out positive energy about the songwriting workshop we're about to have. You know, we're just all trying to make each other better and vibe and not bring negative energy into the world. We're bringing positive energy in the world. Here it is. It's Paul McCartney's Waterfalls. Just smiling at each other, you know.
Don't count your big waterfalls. Please keep to the lake.
I love this song. You know, if you give someone's song too harsh a criticism, it could be a mistake. But we just all need love. Ooh. Paul McCartney has dropped some hints that maybe he thinks TLC ripped them off on their Waterfall song, but I don't think it ever went to court.
Is the saying "don't go chasing waterfalls" was that just in the English lexicon as an idiom?
And he's saying jumping waterfalls. Don't go jumping waterfalls.
Yeah, totally different. He's jumping waterfalls. Very dangerous.
He's not jumping waterfalls. That's too dangerous.
But he must have witnessed somebody in order to issue this caution. Then he chased the polar bear. Did you hear that?
Yeah. He jumped and he chased.
Wow.
He jumped and he
chased. I've never heard this before. That's a huge escalation. Jumping waterfalls, very dangerous. Chasing polar bears, shockingly dangerous. Don't suicidal.
Yeah.
That's lunacy. Don't do that. TLC kind of melded him. Chasing the waterfalls. That chasing waterfalls feels so removed from our physical world. It's like very clear that it's a metaphor.
But you've got to put in a lot of effort to chase a polar bear. You've got to go to a very specific place.
Yeah.
You've got. I guess if you're Paul McCartney, you could just pay to do it at the London Zoo.
Yeah.
Just slip a, 10,000 pounds to the right zookeeper. You can chase a.
I guess on the bright side, that makes it really easy for me to avoid. I'm not going to chase polar bears.
Yeah, that's a
period.
Good point.
Easy for me not to do. Thanks for that, Andrew.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks to everybody who's listened to Punch Up the Jam this week. If you enjoyed it, go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a friend or two about it. As usual, you can get the Punch Up for this week, like every week, on our Patreon. I'm not sure, frankly, I want to put it up. I'm a little embarrassed.
Oh, I'm putting it up.
You don't have
to lift a finger. I'm going to go back through the episode and just cut and paste this out. We'll post this on the Patreon for sure. And if you didn't like today's episode, consider purchasing some property and vending Tennessee ham and jam with your best friend.
Yeah. The Patreon is at patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. You can find you can follow the podcast on Instagram or Twitter at Punch Up the Jam. And next week, like we said, is the first video episode. We will be back talking on video about Young Americans with Julian Shapiro Barnum. We're really excited.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up.
That was a HeadGum Original.